What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer, how laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover and experience the best of nature, with over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Welcome back, folks. You recall earlier this week I talked about being down in Grand Isle for a different rodeo, the Blue Boot Rodeo. We had a great time. The Gulf was just steaming with fish. It was an unbelievable time. Well, not this weekend, but the following weekend, Grand Isle Tarpon Rodeo comes back to us. Just under 100 years of existence, the oldest rodeo in America, scheduled for July 24th through 26th. And we have the Tarpon Rodeo president, Jason Bergeron, with us. And he also happens to be the president of Terrebonne Parish. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Jason, let me just first say congratulations on serving as president of two iconic you know, the parish as well as the Tarpon Rodeo. I know you got to be excited about the being the president of the Tarpon Rodeo.
I do. You know, I appreciate the opportunity. When I was asked, you know, of course you become the admiral first and then you move up to president. The DA in Thibodeau was the president last year. Liz Merle is my admiral, which will be the president next year. And so it's interesting to be included in the group of people that have been selected before me. And even though it's in Jefferson Parish, it's a regional deal, you know, fishing on the Gulf Coast between Venice, Fouchon, Cocodrie, the best fishing in the world, opportunities to promote one of the things that we do best, and to do that with the oldest fishing rodeo in the world, I just couldn't say no.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much to offer there. I happened to be down fishing in Grand Isle this past weekend, and, I mean, it was just incredible, the fishing. I mean, we caught so many different species of fish. It was just insane. The water was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's no time like the rodeo season. You know, you got so many rodeos back-to-back just in Grand Isle alone, but in Fouchon and Cocodrie, and it's just one of the things that makes us the sportsman's paradise.
So, Jason, tell us a little bit about what will go on July 24th through the 26th.
So it starts out on Thursday the 24th, you know, really being that family-friendly opportunity of this event with the kids' crab races. It's cool if you hadn't seen that yet. It's basically like kids show up. It's almost like a soapbox derby with crabs where you're, you know, everybody's got their little tips and tricks of things they do, maybe even soaking the crab in some Red Bull to get them full of energy. And you know, they have a bunch of races on that Thursday. They have the shrimp ball on the Thursday night with some music on both Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night. So you got Shorts in December. You have Ryan Foray on the Friday. And then you got Knock Noon and Wamatu's finishing things up on the Saturday.
Yeah, they always have great entertainment, a great turnout there at the Pavilion, which is covered, and they got a whole bunch of big-ass fans under there now, too, so it makes it a little cooler.
Yes, it is, and it's you know, a great event between the music, the arts and crafts, the food. You know, it's all going towards good cause. They work with scholarships for Grand Isle students and other nonprofits. And so, you know, again, the oldest fishing rodeo in the world, proud to be part of that in South Louisiana, and just everything we could do to promote that and similar events just like it.
I served in that capacity once, and I had a blast as well, and you will too. I mean, it's just a lot of fun. You got to see a little bit of it last year for sure. Let's pivot real quick. We got this little disturbance out there in the Gulf. Hopefully that'll get through, and I know that won't disrupt the fishing for the following week, but as though you're not busy enough, right, in preparation for the rodeo, you got a disturbance to deal with.
Yes, sir. We were closely monitoring it. You know, we're going to definitely get some rain. I think it's a good opportunity for people to kind of go through their checklists and make sure that yards are cleaned up, things are battened down, generators and those kind of items that were, you know, make sure you get flashlights, your batteries, just, you know, go through that checklist and use this as an opportunity to prepare that it could be a bigger storm. But like I said, we've already started pumping down our systems. We're double checking drains. You know, we do it all year, but we go through and try to make sure if we got some areas that we know we have issues with in the past. But like I've been telling everybody, you know, if you got a tree that you cut down in your yard or some brush that you've been storing in your yard, the water can pick that up, carry that into the drain, and next thing you know, you got a clogged drain. So real quick, you can go from not having a situation to having a situation, and so we just want to make sure that everybody's prepared.
No, absolutely. Any particular challenges that you see out there?
Well, we're working with a bridge crisis as we speak. You know, we've been working within there's four DOTD bridges now, two parish bridges, and different levels of construction, repair, or being built, you know, et cetera, or just malfunctions. So we had a couple barges hit some bridges. So we're navigating that battle right now. We're hoping to have one of the major bridges open before this weather hits here. Again, working with DOTD. We got our team, everybody from the parish officials, DOTD state officials, elected officials, everybody's just coming together to help try to get these issues resolved, along with some other road construction type limitations. But again, you know, we're hoping to have some relief here before the weather gets here. But we are preparing. You know, I've heard numbers of, you know, 10 inches of rain over that 4-day period. When you spread it out, not that bad. Usually the problem is when you get a bunch of rain in a short amount of time. So we just want to keep an eye out for that. And I tell everybody just stay tuned for the weather stations, news stations, any alerts and posts that we do. We're going to work to keep our residents informed and prepared.
Yeah, and once this thing moves by, it's not going to impact next week at all. Thursday, Friday, Saturday for the Grand Isle Tarpon Rodeo. If you want to register, you can do so at the Otto Candy's office right there on Highway 90, right by the Desalmans Bridge. You can't miss it on the left-hand side. Or that's from 9 to 12, or Bridgeside Marina in Grand Isle, Hurricane Hole Marina. And you can also register at the Tarpon Rodeo Pavilion when they start opening up there on Wednesday. And you'll be able
And you can also buy tickets online. Online's an opportunity, and every ticket purchased, even if you're fishing or not, has an opportunity to win $10,000.
Yeah, Eventbrite, I think, is where you go online, right?
If you go to the Grand Isle website, the Grand Isle Tarpon Rodeo website, that'll direct you to there, or through the Facebook page can direct you to where you can purchase your tickets. So.
Well, I won't be able to join y'all this year, but have a great time, Jason. It's a lot of fun. Thank you for serving as the America's oldest fishing tournament. We just got to keep it alive and keep it going.
Yes, sir. 97th year, so we're 3 years out of 100. So it's a pretty amazing feat.
No doubt. Jason Bergeron, Terrebonne Parish President, and serving as Tarpon Rodeo President this year, July 24th through 26th. On Grand Isle, right there at the Pavilion. Check it out if you want to. They have a lot of activities for kids, folks. I mean, it's just so much for kids to do. they love going to the scales. They love seeing the display of the fish that are caught, and there's all kinds of other things happening on the island during that weekend. So if you're looking for a lot of fun things to do, you can just take a day trip down there. It's an interesting drive. It's an easy drive. Get on down there to the Grand Isle Tarpon Rodeo, July 24th, 25th, and 26th. Have a great time. Jason Bergeron.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Out here, we feel things. The sore calves that lead to epic views. The cool waterfall mist during a hot hike. And the breeze that hits just right at the summit. But hey, don't just listen to us. Experience it for yourself. All Trails makes it easy to discover the best of the outdoors. With more than 450,000 trails around the world, points of interest along the trail, and offline maps for always-on navigation. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
This summer, Instacart is bringing back your favorites from 1999 with prices from 1999. That means 90s prices on juice pouches that ought to be respected, 90s prices on box mac and cheese, and 90s prices on ham, cheese, and cracker lunches. Enjoy all those throwbacks and more at throwback prices. Only through Instacart. $4.72 maximum discount per $10 of eligible items. Limit one offer per order. Expires 9/5 while supplies last. Discount based on CPI comparison.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We've talked a lot about the changes to Medicaid in the what's referred to as the Big Beautiful Bill. And what healthcare providers as well as healthcare systems will be facing in the near future. And here to further this discussion with us is Kevin Callison, PhD, Associate Professor, Program Director in Health Policy and Management at Tulane University. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So as you look at the provisions in the bill, what are the big concerns that you see from a healthcare delivery system perspective?
Yeah, I think there are two overriding concerns for health systems. One is that we're likely to see a reduction in Medicaid enrollment associated with the bill, and so you know, those if people lose their Medicaid coverage, in all likelihood they'll be uninsured, and then still show up for care, still need to go to the hospital, still need to go to the emergency department, and providers won't get that Medicaid reimbursement for the care. Instead, it'll be called something that we call uncompensated care. So it'll be care that doesn't get reimbursed for the providers. So I think that's one concern. I think the other large concern for providers has to do with some of the more wonky details of the bill that involve cuts to ways that the state can raise money for the Medicaid program and the ways in which states can direct some of their payments to providers that eventually will result in lower Medicaid reimbursement rates to providers.
So let's talk about the first. The most recent reports out of Louisiana is that 7 in 10 of Medicaid recipients now are, in fact, gainfully employed. That would mean that there's 70% of the folks that obviously have the ability to fill out this paperwork. They're fulfilling the requirements of being employed, and roughly 30% may be exempt from this with the new rules, maybe some not, but it doesn't seem like there's this large percentage of people that are going to have a problem here. I mean, is this kind of conjecture, or is this just that, are we looking at some kind of data that indicates that this could be a potential outcome?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. So the way that work requirements tend to lead to disenrollments from Medicaid is not so much that people just aren't eligible for the program anymore. It's that it tends to be the case that people who are eligible lose coverage because they struggle with the verification process. And, you know, we do deal with a lot of projections, but there are actually two really solid pieces of evidence that would suggest that work requirements enrollment to Medicaid, and that comes from Arkansas and Georgia, which are two states that implemented some form of work requirements in the Medicaid program. Arkansas did this prior to COVID. Georgia has a work requirement for a portion of their Medicaid program. And in both cases, in Arkansas's case, they saw about 18,000 people lose coverage in about 10 months before their work requirement program was stopped. And you know, those coverage losses were primarily not because people weren't still eligible for Medicaid, but because people weren't able to verify their eligibility. And in Georgia's program that includes work requirements, they expanded Medicaid coverage subject to work requirements, expected about 100,000 people to potentially enroll in this expansion, and they've seen something on the order of fewer than 10,000 people enroll. So I think there is pretty solid evidence that work requirements do lead to reduced enrollment in Medicaid.
But part of the problem is that as I talk to the regulators and looking at research, a lot of states aren't connecting dots, those that are moving in and out of Medicaid eligibility because of employment, where they're offered something, offered health care to some extent. The same holds true with people moving in and out of a state relative, to that. It seems as though we're not able to quantify these numbers very well.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, if we look at the experience.
Hi, why don't we.
On that, yeah, sorry.
Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead, Doc. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, as we go beyond that, we do need to rely on projections, evidence of what we see when people go through the standard redetermination program in Medicaid. So anybody who's enrolled in Medicaid once a year, sometimes more frequently than once a year, has to renew their Medicaid coverage. And we know that that's often a point at which people lose coverage, not.
All right, we're going to get to a break. We seem to have a connection problem with Kevin Callison. So we'll go to a break now and we'll try and get reconnected with him and we'll be right back.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With AllTrails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
It's that time of year again, back to school season. And Instacart knows that the only thing harder than getting back into the swing of things is getting all the back to school supplies, snacks, and essentials you need. So here's your reminder to make your life a little easier this season. Shop favorites from Staples, Best Buy, and Costco, all delivered through Instacart, so that you can get some time back and do whatever it is that you need to get your life back on track. Instacart, we're here.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Kevin Callison, Associate Professor, Program Director in Health Policy and Management at Tulane University. Kevin, let's talk to the second point that you raised about provider taxes and how that works with Medicaid. And I'm just kind of curious to start the conversation this way. In this country, we spend on an average about $14,500 per person annually in health care. And and health care is now consuming about 18% of the U.S. GDP. And we pay more than double the average of any other high-income country in the world.
Yep.
And I'm wondering, how did we get to this point, and how do we turn this around? With Medicaid increasing 50% over the last 5 years in the cost, we can't continue down this path. So what needs to change?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's a very big question.
And I know
question.
It's a big one, but, you know. Yeah. These exotic financing schemes, you know, I served on a hospital board for over 20 years, and I've been really surprised that these schemes have lasted as long as they have, because I don't think it's unfair to call it a scheme, you know, and it's just a way that states have figured out to try and shirk their responsibility, in my view, of funding and financing the healthcare delivery system within their respective states. It used to be a shared program with the federal government. It's now about 90-10 federal spend versus state spend. And obviously the federal government wants to reverse that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you were designing a system from the ground up, you would never design a system in which states use this mechanism of provider taxes to fund their Medicaid system. But that's where we're at. You know, it's a reflection of the fact that the state Medicaid programs from the state's perspectives often tend to be underfunded, and they can't use traditional federal matching dollars to meet the needs that they want to meet. In terms of growth and spending, both in Medicaid and overall, I mean, one of the reasons you see Medicaid spending growth has grown so much over time is because there are many more people covered by Medicaid now than there were, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And so spending on the program has gone up because we have more people in the program. In terms of why we spend more than other countries, you know, that's an issue that there are there aren't any explanations for. I would say that the primary explanation for that is that we pay higher prices for just about everything in the U.S. than people in other countries pay. And so it shouldn't be too much of a surprise that our total spending is higher when we're paying higher prices for everything.
But that's an outcome. That's the what. Why? I mean, you know, when we think about, like, pharmacy costs, you go to Canada, yeah, you can get stuff for about one-fifth of what it would cost, yeah, here in the United States for the same drug.
Well, there's two reasons for that. One is that most other countries outside of the U.S. have price controls that keep prices lower than prices in the U.S. We have some price controls in say, the Medicare program, the Medicaid program, for example. But often prices tend to be the outcome of a negotiation process in the U.S. between insurers and providers. That's often not the case in other places. Another reason is that you know, people, companies, providers can charge higher prices when there's higher demand or higher willingness to pay for the product. And the U.S. is a high-income country. We have higher incomes than other countries, and so prices tend to be higher here. You know, I'd say if you're looking at two of those explanations, the first explanation, the price controls, is probably the biggest reason why we pay higher prices than other places, but I think both of those things contribute.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting how this is going to play out. I mean, some of these changes are not going to go into effect, I think, until 2027.
Right.
What is your confidence level that the state is going to devise, you know, this registration program, you know, verification process, so that it's fair to those that should, you know, that qualify, that it's easy for them to qualify? I mean, I understand that there are folks that are out there that are not tech savvy, they're not this, they're not that,
yeah,
you know, and going about to make sure that they stay eligible, or they're able to register and stay in the program.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my experiences working with people at the Louisiana Department of Health and Louisiana Medicaid, you know, they do really great work trying to keep people who are eligible for programs enrolled in programs, try and, you know, especially during COVID, where disenrollments were essentially stopped for Medicaid. That process restarted, the process of renewing and disenrollments restarted about a year ago. And Louisiana was one of the states that did more than any other states to try and get out there and make people aware that these processes were happening. So I have a lot of confidence that that will be the case with things like work requirements and these other changes that are coming along. But that being said, you know, the Department of Health and Louisiana Medicaid, they have a big challenge in front of them with developing a system that's going to track and verify compliance with these work requirements. Again, we can, you know, look to states that have tried to do these sorts of things. In Georgia, they had to build a system of verification. I think they've spent over $50 million on that system. Now, there was some money set aside in the legislation to provide some assistance to states for doing this, but that total amount of money set aside is about $100 million. So it doesn't seem like that's going to be enough to address the technological needs that states are going to have. So I do think that that will present a challenge.
Now, in this state, we've done our own internal financing, exotic financing scheme for the rural hospitals. And we hear a lot of discussion and conversation, and there's a lot of consternation about delivery of health care in the rural areas. It's a big challenge here in the state of Louisiana. Where do you see this going? I know that there's a fund that was set up in the bill as well. I don't know, yeah, you know, whether it's going to be enough money. I suspect that it's not, depending, yeah, on how the states deal with this issue.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of concern among rural hospitals, rural healthcare providers, that the bill could have major impacts on finances. I do think that there's some shielding in the first few years. You know, you mentioned some provisions not going into effect until 2028, work requirements in 2027. So there is a delay in when some of these things will take effect. And in addition to that, There was a rural hospital fund created under the legislation that's going to provide $10 billion a year over the next 5 years. So I think in the short term, there's going to be time to weather some of these changes and prepare for some of these changes. My concern is more about what happens in the longer term. So that rural hospital fund is funded for 5 years. You know, that goes away after 5 years. There was a Senator Hawley from Missouri just proposed legislation yesterday to extend that to 10 years. So it's possible those things will change. But I think there's a cushion built in for these first few years. Senator Cassidy actually was instrumental in getting some changes to the bill made that really impacted Louisiana's ability to make additional payments to rural hospitals that at least through 2027 is going to keep those payments, those additional payments flowing to rural hospitals. So, you know, I think in the short term, we're probably okay, but in the longer term, there's going to have to be some consideration over how to deal with these payment cuts.
You know, some of the policy decisions in the state, I think, kind of drove us to these provider tax schemes, and probably in Texas as well, because I think that's where most of this actually started. You know, where we would take our UCC, our uncompensated care number, certify it to the state would send it up to the Fed, they'd either get 2 or 3 to 1, whatever the reimbursement program was. And the certifying hospital, mostly in the urban centers of the state, they never received any money back for that certification of uncompensated care. Those dollars went straight to the funding and financing of the rural hospitals, which left, you know, these hospitals in here through the metro area in the city really kind of down and out, because they had no way of backfilling. Sometimes a certification in some areas could have been $20, $30, $35 million. That's a lot of money, you know, to suck out of a standalone hospital. It's easier for a system to absorb it, but for standalones to absorb that and then send all those dollars, to the rurals. And so I can understand why we went down this path of provider taxes, but we never really kind of, I don't think, have diagnostically tested the system to see whether or not we're healthy or not, whether or not any of this was going to really be able to sustain itself in the future. I've always thought, you know, I was one of the few Republicans that supported Medicaid expansion, but I never thought for a minute that it was going to stay expanded, because I knew we couldn't afford it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens to the state Medicaid programs with the changes that are coming to the provider taxes. So Louisiana was actually in a better position than many other states, because we don't rely as much on these provider taxes as a funding mechanism for our Medicaid program as many other states do. But, you know, this source of funding where, you know, states tax providers, draw down extra federal money, and then give that money back to providers, it doesn't go away under this new legislation, but states' ability to do this is restricted. So I think in Louisiana, we're going to be better equipped to deal with that than some other states, but I completely agree with you. I'm interested to see what changes this is going to result in terms of findings. So you take those provider taxes and you couple those with these state-directed payments that have been made to increase reimbursement rates to rural hospitals. And I think with changes to both of those things, we're going to see a shakeup in the funding scheme for these hospitals.
And then you have Medicare and Medicaid that change how much they give you for whatever DRG, like twice a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got this really bastardized thing going on here where it takes hospitals and providers a while to catch up to these changes. And for me, it's almost as though that's intentionally that way, because you're always behind the eight ball with the federal government.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of these things are just, I don't know about intentional, but bureaucratic and you know, don't make the most sense. They present a real challenge for projecting expenses, projecting revenues, when you don't know what's going to change and what's not. I mean, I do think that, you know, in terms of funding schemes like provider taxes. I think if this bill shifts a reliance in Medicaid funding away from things like provider taxes to something else, I don't know what that something else might be, but I don't think that would be a bad outcome of a bill like this. I mean, these kinds of indirect measures, and you know, I don't want to call them tricks because it's nothing that's illegal. It's nothing that's happening under the table. You know, this is all regulated.
No, they all Medicaid approved it. Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's not like states are doing anything wrong here, but it's certainly not a transparent way to fund your programs.
Yeah, and if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, if you'd kind of briefly describe how that works.
Sure. So the provider tax provision, what happens is that in Louisiana, for every dollar we spend in Medicaid, the federal government gives us about 70 cents. They cover about 70 cents of that dollar. And so the more money that Louisiana spends as a state on the Medicaid program, the more they get back from the federal government in this match rate that occurs in the Medicaid program. And so since about, I guess, in the 80s is when these provider taxes started, and then they got formalized in the 90s or early 2000s. But what states have realized that they could do is that they could levy fees or taxes on hospitals and nursing homes and managed care organizations that provide health insurance. They could use these taxes as spending, as state spending in the Medicaid program, to draw down more federal money. And then they give that money back to the hospitals and the long-term care facilities through higher reimbursement rates. So if you're a hospital, this sounds like a really bad thing. Like, I have to pay this provider tax. But it's actually not a bad thing, because the money comes back to you in higher reimbursement rates, and it allows the state to draw down more federal money for their Medicaid program.
So you have a guaranteed return on your investment.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Most people don't look at the tax as an investment, but in this scenario, it actually is, right?
That's right. Yeah. Strangely enough, in this case, the people who are being taxed don't mind at all that they're being taxed.
But I think this is emblematic of healthcare in this country from a legislative perspective, both at state levels and at the federal level. They really don't want to deal with this problem, do they? I mean, that's
hard.
Why you have these things.
Yeah, it's such an intractable issue. Yeah.
So, you know, we continue down this path, and we get caught up in all of these schemes, you know, and it's like we can't get out of them. And then when the cost gets so difficult to manage, and then you have a shock response to it, like a shock and awe response, and then the whole system goes into a frenzy.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree that if you're designing this thing, we'd never collect the system that we have in place. But because it's so hard to get big things done, especially now in Congress, and you know, passing any sort of legislation is such a challenge, that we end up with a lot of these changes around the edges. And some of these changes around the edges turn into things like these provider taxes and these what seem like really odd ways to, you know, fund the Medicaid system, for example. But because it's so hard to get things changed on a large scale, you know, you end up with these sorts of things that in place. So, yeah, I completely agree. I mean, none of this is probably the best or the most efficient way of doing things, but it's what has evolved with the challenges that we face.
Has this been in some way an outgrowth of you know, when healthcare decided to try this population management? You know, we moved from kind of fee-for-service models where it was a lot easier, I think, to track expenses, right? The way that these schemes are working, it seems to me, you know, and as I sat on that hospital board, it was really hard to track how much you were actually spending and where and why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, it's really, if you're paying providers for the care that they provide, that's pretty straightforward. The problem is that incentivizes more and more and more care provision, even in cases where it's not necessarily needed, right? So then you say, okay, well, we really
we don't really care about the care you provide. We care about the outcomes that are the result of that. So we're going to pay based on outcomes, based on quality of care or these health metrics. But we've been arguing for, you know, 30 or 40 years now about how to measure those things. And it becomes really difficult to say, how do you measure and pay for high quality care? Or how do you measure and pay for, you know, better health outcomes? So I agree. I mean, ideally that would be the way to go, but it's just been a really tough road to try and go down.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was looking at an article about treatable mortality and where the United States stands there, and it was kind of shocking to me. We have an age-adjusted rate of 109 deaths per 100,000 people in the United States, and we rank 27th out of the 32 highest income countries in the world in treatable mortality. So when you look at that index, we're not doing a great job there either. And it's like something.
We always come out poorly on these scales where you look at, you know, dollars spent per life years gained, things like that. U.S. never looks good on those sorts of scales.
And I don't know if it's a cultural thing. Obviously, it has a lot to do with the way we eat. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. I was just in Croatia, and I mean, everything's organic there, and everything's like almost farm to table. And when you look at soft drinks there, the stuff that we allow to be put in soft drinks in this country, they would never allow that in that country. And you know, it makes you wonder, well, what the heck's going on here? What do they know that we don't know? Or maybe we know and we don't care. I don't know. But, I mean, you know.
Well, I think that's a question. You know, when you see where the U.S. ranks in terms of health outcomes and you compare it to spending, you know, I think one of the challenges there is how much can healthcare do versus how much of these health outcomes are related to behavioral health. That's always a real trick. You know, it's hard to compare differences in behavioral health across countries, even within the U.S. You know, we'll see, you can, in some places, you can go a couple miles and life expectancy changes by 20 years. Now, how much of that is due to medical care and spending on medical care versus how much of that is due to, you know, the behaviors? It's a tough one.
Yeah, we just, I guess the more I talk with you, Doc, the more complicated I'm making this.
Right? Well,
I apologize for saying, but I really enjoy the conversation. And I think the listening audience does too, that, you know, I try to make this as educational as possible so folks understand how these systems actually work. They're complex. They're not easy. And there's a reason why we're not addressing these things to unwind a lot of this, because, it's a Pandora's box for sure. There's no doubt. Kevin Callison,
absolutely,
associate professor at Tulane Health and Policy Management. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate the time and the insight.
Yes, thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. We'll check in with Scoot when we return. Stay with us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, the Epstein files are still in the news. Also, so is immigration. We'll talk a little bit about all of that coming up.
All righty, Scoot's headed your way, folks. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Wednesday evening. We'll see you in the morning.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free.
talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features Swift Rinse Tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.